Dr. Harapni, welcome to our part number three for our podcast. And I'm going to pass it now to my colleague, Allison Palmer. She's going to have you next question. Go ahead, Allison.
So I actually have two questions. One of them is how long you've had your e-portfolio, and also how do you decide what to post on your e-portfolio? Like, where does that information come from?
Okay, the current iteration of my ePortfolio, if you go back, I think the first post is either 2010 or 2011. So this iteration, I guess 10 years plus. Prior to that, I had been doing I had multiple websites in different platforms. So prior to going to WordPress, I had I've had a website up since probably the early 90s. So I've had an ePortfolio since the early 90s in a variety of different iterations. I regret not consolidating all that stuff because I still have a lot of my ideas. I also worked for a couple of, I worked at the University of Alberta, and I did a lot of work for them in the late 90s, early 2000s. And then I did some other work for another college. So from about 99 to 2006, I did a lot of posting at other people's sites, right? I did a lot of development for a university and then a college. And so I probably blogged multiple times a week. And so I, you know, we're talking hundreds of posts that I wasn't able to take with me, right? So I've been blogging for 25 years, probably. Officially on my current website, the last 10, 11. And again, one of my biggest regrets is that I didn't consolidate this earlier. Like it just drives me crazy that I kind of, so much work out that I have it in, I do have it in digital format, but to go back and it would be much better if it was up. So that's something, regrets, right? We all have. How do I decide? Right now, I haven't been posting as much as I like, simply because my schedule is a little bit on the hectic side. Dr. Thibodeau left the program, and I'm doing double duty on courses and teaching, and our numbers have increased in the program. So my posting isn't as frequent. It's every couple of weeks or once a week. And because I'm a huge consumer of information, I'm always looking at videos, and so it's easy. I almost always post a Wednesday video here and there. So I try to post something that's going to be pertinent to learning, something significant. I have multiple lists that I subscribe to. I'm seeing a lot of research going on. And if something tweaks me or something irritates me or something bothers me, I'll respond to it. So for example, a little while back, I can't remember where I saw it, but there was sort of a buzz talking about the fact that the growth mindset really doesn't work. There's no scientific justification for the growth mindset. Well, okay, I went to take a look at that research. And in one sense, they're right. If you use the growth mindset as a treatment, it doesn't work, because the growth mindset is part of a bigger, broader perspective. And so I responded. I did a post. I did my own podcast on that, and I did a post. So quite often I'm responding to something I read, some issue or some literature. I try to stay away from, you probably notice, I try to stay away from politics. I try to stay within the notion of learning and key issues. And I'm always trying to look at ideas that can help students. So for example, I'm going to be doing a post here shortly for the blended and online learning course. I've got a couple of posts that I'll put up as tips pages, right? So that's going to be happening. With the ADL program, you'll probably notice I had to replicate and I had to build out a different perspective on the ADL program while maintaining the DLL program. You probably, if you've been on my website recently, you might have noticed that I've been building out a lot of ideas on learner's mindset. And I have a whole other learner's mindset website that I maintain as well. So how do I decide? I try to post ideas that will be useful in your course, in the learner's mindset, and in other places. So it's about organizing and consolidating ideas and helping people to use the knowledge and information I have. I see myself at a point perhaps because of my age and maturity and experience, I can make connections that a lot of other people aren't necessarily seeing. And if I can bring together ideas and consolidate and provide an opinion that is actually helpful, then I think I need to do that. So that's probably a bigger reason why I will post what I do. I don't do cutesy stuff. Sometimes I do post a humorous thing here and there, but it's really, I'm trying to use my website as a tool, as a resource for learning everything about I'm always thinking about learning, always. It's always there. So if I run across something that will help further this notion of learning, I'll post it somewhere. Now, if you were to take a look at my, I've got an Evernote and I've got a file of probably about 2,000 ideas that I haven't posted. Every day I write two or three ideas. I got to do this. So I've got a dot write tag. And so every day I read something. Oh, I got to post on that. Got to post on that. Got to post on that. And sometimes I get around to it. Sometimes I don't. So once the ADL program is finished being developed and my life will turn back to a low roar as opposed to, a loud roar, I'll be able to capitalize and get a lot of these ideas out. I'm going to be doing a fair amount of work on assessment as learning coming up, because it's going to play a very significant role in your online and blended learning courses you're going to be doing. And thinking about the learning, we talked about it in one of your questions about this whole, assessment for learning, that formative assessment piece, that's really, really important. And how does the ePortfolio play a role in that? If there is one thing that I think I need to spend more time on helping students get good at, is that become self-evaluators, right? And being able to look at that and do that self-assessment and go through that decision-making process. And so I'm seeing needs. In one of the courses, I'm thinking, I've got to build a couple of tips videos. Well, if I build a tips video, I have to build a tips post, right? So that's another thing. So quite often I'll combine a need that I see, and then I'll build something. And then I need to build it well enough so I can point to the research so that it isn't just Harapnik's opinion. No, this is substantial. Here's the research. Here's why this is important. And this is what you should consider. So it goes back to my passion of wanting to help people be more effective at learning. So that's how I make the decision, I think. Whew, that took me a long time to get there, didn't it? Does that help?
No.
Yeah, that did help. I wanted to ask, because looking at my own ePortfolio, I'm kind of torn between, like, a lot of blogs that I see teachers have, they're posting things about like what's working for their students, what's not working for their students, or posting pictures and videos of like what their students are actually doing. And that's not really something that I feel like I want to post. It's more similar to what you're talking about. I want my ePortfolio to be a resource for my students and their parents to use to help them learn. I don't want it just to be about like my thoughts or opinions on what's happening all the time. Like, that's not its main purpose for me. Is I want it to be more of a tool that people can use. So I don't know. I was just curious to kind of where your mind goes when you're thinking about what should I post, what should I not post, which you kind of mentioned that too, that staying away from politics and that kind of thing.
Well, I actually agree with what you're saying. I tend not to post just sort of a update. It's really something useful. And I do see my website as a resource. And actually, I think it's important that we contribute and wherever we can. I'm a researcher, I'm a scholar, I'm an academic. I have a responsibility to share what I know. And if I have a better way to do something, well, then it's my responsibility to do that. Sure. Dr. Thibodeau and I have cranked out a bunch of articles. Nobody reads that stuff. Oh, great, right? You've your peer-reviewed articles in recognized journals. So what? I think my blog posts about different ideas, and it's interesting. I get a lot of comments on my DIY about videos and lighting and writing other things. Guess what? I'm building a course on video construction because I've had a whole bunch of people contact me about doing that. And so right now I'm working with a department, a small city in the interior of BC. And I've been working with, I do teach at another institution. So some of these are my students, and they came together and asked me if I could build a course on this or help them. And so I'm taking this opportunity to build a course in that regard. I'll start next week or next month. But again, it's a need. It's a need that people are identifying. And if I can help people with that, I that's where I want to go. And that's what I've always tried to do. And what I'm finding is that if I can sort of connect those needs to bigger themes, I think it's important. So it's interesting. Now, Allison mentioned that she wants to build this resource. Let me ask you folks, do you see your e-portfolios as a resource that you are using to share with other people? Is that the key aspect that you've gotten out of the ADL program? Is that where you're going?
I it's not where I want it to be. It might not ever be, and I'm okay with that, but it has been, as you know, I do have a team of people that are working on implementing e-portfolios and constructing their own. And it was beyond valuable to be able to have it, to show them what I'm talking about. And I also applied for a district level position that got cut because our state did not choose to fund online learning. But I was able to apply to that position, and everybody that would have interviewed me are now curious. Like, they saw the language that they're using already on my e-portfolio, and they know that it's language that I'm using because they're reading it. Like, they to answer the question of who am I, they know who I am just by, because I had it. And I'm truly blown away by the value that it added to my initiative, but also to me personally. And it's definitely here to stay. it'll change because it's not what it should be. Really right now it's for this course. But I have tweaked it and added to it beyond the course's requirements, and I'll continue to do that.
I'll say same thing, Dr. H. I mean, I use my website, my e-portfolio as, you know, part of what we use for our in-service weeks when teachers come back. And of course, we have a week where the leaders come, you know, before the teachers. This year was a matter of like, okay, so we've been doing this every year. So what do? What is the agenda when the teachers come in? And I was like, we can start talking about growth mindset. A lot of people were just talking about, no, we need to go over, you know, Canvas, and they need to learn this. But if they're not open to it, how do you want them to change? How you want them to be invested in? So at the end, they say, okay, what do you have? Well, I have this website. We might want to follow. I have some of the questions that, you know, I've been using, and Dr. Horapnik has been asking me to think about, and that's what I use with my leaders. And they replicate that with their teachers. They refer to my website. So it was really powerful. It really gave us the focus of the year, which, you know, after the third, you know, an hour meeting, my principal was like, okay, grow mindset. Yes, this is the year of grow mindset.
Yeah.
Yes. And I was like, yeah, I'm so glad. I don't know if it was meant to be or like it was the right timing, but there was nothing that they could have said that we needed to work on, that I didn't have to say, if there's not a growth mindset, it's not going to work. Which is going to do the same thing, professional development every year, push them to do this, and they're not going to go through, they're not going to follow through, they're going to be discouraged, they're going to have, you know, they're going to feel that, you know, it's not working because they don't really understand the why. So it was just going back to all those pieces that you have in the website. So yes, thank you for that. You did save us a lot of work.
Cool.
Oh, okay. I guess I'm sorry. That's my turn. I know. No, Brianna wanted to say something. She was like, I always put Brianna in the spotlight.
All the time.
Go ahead, Brianna. Here has a question. But I want to follow up, you know, Allison's question, and I know you mentioned, and you have talked even during the course, all the courses that we've been with you, you have talked a lot about your sons and how important they were for you. So I do have a question that I want you to think on the time where your sons were in middle school. You know, how did you decide what curriculum or what resources to use with them to, you know, to enforce or to just kind of support their learning? Just think about that specific time when, you know, they're not children, but they're not adults. They're still right in between.
Yeah. I don't know if I have shared this with everybody before. My sons grew up in a very different way, and we educated them in an alternative fashion. And so some people would call it unschooling, some people would call it homeschooling. So when they were in middle school, we were living in a small city in southern Alberta, and we had friends, they had two friends their own very close age who were in school, and we had connected with that school, and they did some phys ed, they did some general assemblies, they did a lot of the sort of corporate social things with the school. But in terms of the education, the curriculum, it was something that my wife and I took care of. My boys grew up on a steady diet of projects, and everything that they did revolved around some project. And so projects were connected to mathematics. So we would take a look at where they needed to be with their math curriculum, and how could we incorporate fractions or algebra or a variety of different things, where at whatever level that they were at, and bring that into some of the projects that we were working on. Science was easy because it's easy to do experiments, and it's easy to explore certain things. And where we live, there's a lot of museums and different centers where you could, you know, do interesting things. So it really was a matter of being aware of where they were at. I was aware of the curriculum requirements in the province that I was living at the time, or the state when we were in Texas. And it really didn't matter that much. We weren't aligning specifically to them, but we also knew where they needed to be at different ages. And we also recognized that they were going to be probably more advanced than most other kids because they were able to really apply things. And so the decisions that we made was really a matter of looking at the bigger picture. Who do we want them to be? What do we want them to be able to do? Where are we in terms of our life? What projects, what interests do they have? So my boys were into biking. They were into skiing. They were into building a dirt jump park. So physics came into play, building ramps, you know, so they were always creating something. They were always working on their bikes. When they switched from mechanical brakes to hydraulic brakes, we had an opportunity to explore how hydraulics work. So in every real world scenario, I saw an opportunity to learn. When we moved from one location to another, the house that we had a big planter in the backyard. And I might've mentioned this in one of our courses. So it had a big raised ground planter, and it had railroad ties around it and a bunch of dirt. Well, and the rest of the backyard was rock. So it's called xeriscaping, and it's Southern Alberta, it's dry there. So my boys had to figure out how they were gonna move this raised planter to the back and distribute the dirt and use all the state railroad ties to build a barricade for the dirt to have sort of plant something at the back of the yard, and then cover up that space and get more rock, and then they could put their trampoline up. So in order for them to actually get their trampoline up, they had to actually calculate how much, you know, how big of a space it would take to move the existing raised planter and dirt to the backyard. So math, it was all about math. And it was interesting there. I get phone calls, Dad, you're going to have to get some type of material. We'll have to cover up the ground so that the grass doesn't go through. Okay, Levi, how much? I'll call you back. You know, 20 minutes later. Okay, Dad, I think it comes in rolls of 20 feet. I think I'm going to need two rolls. I don't. But you know what? But if we did it the other way, I might need. Hang on, Dad. Let me call you back. So it was an ongoing procedure, right? So there was always some project that they were working on that we connected to school. We had them involved in activities that's at this school with their friends. And we also had them involved in different groups. They were in kids clubs, and we had, we played floor hockey on Friday nights at a certain location. And so they, you know, we're always doing something. We're always had something on the go. We're traveling, we're biking, we're visiting. No, we didn't. Eagle scouting wasn't as popular.
I've always wondered about that.
Oh, okay. Well, so the eagle behind me, they volunteered at a Birds of Prey Center. So in Southern Alberta, actually it's renowned in Canada as a center where they work with birds of prey who are injured. And so that eagle is an eagle that my boys got to work with when they had the birds. So they volunteered there. They feed the birds. They cleaned out pens. You know, they actually got to fly a hawk. And that eagle is one of the eagles that was at the Birds of Prey Center. And so they did photography, you know, they documented their lives. They put everything in e-portfolios. So the selection of the curriculum, I know it's a long explanation here, was really a matter of coordinating what activities in the real world were happening and making it fit and mapping it to science or math or English is easy. So we're always reading books and you know, so that part was easy. The science and math was a little bit more work in terms of coordinating the curriculum. Does that help?
Yeah, definitely. That's something that does really help. I don't know, I'm picking up some sound. Do you guys are hearing the same thing? That was the sound. Okay. I think it's gone.
That leads to my last question about your sons constructing their own e-portfolios. I was wondering, just curious, when you started them doing that formally, and didn't you really want to just tell them how to do it? Like in some cases as a parent, I know they have to figure it out, but it's hard not to share like what I've learned. So did you really not tell them to do it a certain way? You let them figure it all out?
Well, it was actually a lot more work to build an e-portfolio when they were younger. WordPress was not around. I was using tools like Drupal or Zoop or Zope, or like I was using early CMS tools. I actually even had them coding a bit of HTML at one point. That was a lot of work. That wasn't fun. They got to choose their templates and backgrounds, and they simply had to record what it is that they were doing. So I would help them explore and investigate. And because they had always had a lot of control over their own space, so they could decorate their room in the way that they want. This was theirs. I have a story that I use in this for the upcoming course development in the design course, design component of the online and blended learning design course, where I talk about the fact that my boys love to paint like all small kids do. And we had a fence, really, really long fence, a house we were living in Edmonton, very, very long wooden fence. And we had to actually repair it and paint it. And they could hardly wait. They were young. They were probably in elementary school. They could hardly wait to get paint on that fence. Like this was going to be a blast, paint flowing everywhere. It was going to be just amazing. It took almost a week of work of preparation. It was dreadful. They hated it. The scraping, the scratching, the filling, oh, the sanding. It was terrible. And then it took about a day to paint it. It was terrible. It was too short. But they learned that preparation, planning, is really, really important. And it might take a long time to work towards something, but then the result might be a little bit shorter, but then the final painted job is going to be really, really good. So letting them struggle through that process was really important. And sometimes they did it wrong. Sometimes it didn't work. Sometimes they had to fight and struggle. Sometimes they couldn't figure it out. And then sometimes I'd come in and help them in the same way that when we were scraping the fence, unless somebody can show you the proper way to actually scrape something or sand, you could waste a lot of time. So it's a matter of allowing a certain amount of experimentation, a little bit of direction and guidance. Now, to be responsible with that, I had to show them how to use certain tools. So again, with the e-portfolio, there's this balance. You have to find that balance. Levi was a little bit older than his younger brother, a little bit more proficient, but they were both willing to explore and to experiment. And because they could do it themselves, they each had very unique sites. And then when down the road, when we switched into WordPress, we were in Texas, they really had a fair amount of fun. And in Texas, their Levi's e-portfolio really came into being because he documented a lot of stuff. And it was all him. They did everything. Now, I've had to move e-portfolios, so I had to help them with some of the administration. But for the most part, I let them explore and experiment. I pointed to different tools, but they did that. In one sense, how was your experience in exploring and experimenting with a different e-portfolio? So Brianna, you're still wondering, maybe I should have gone to WordPress, but this will work, right? So how do you feel about me letting go?
I'm making the best of it. It definitely feels like the parent child situation, because it's kind of like, to be fair, you told us to kind of lean towards WordPress, even though you gave us the option. And I said, no, I'm going to do it this way. And I did, and I'm doing the best that I can with it. And I feel like it's the best that it can be, but it can be better. But I'm limited to that with Wix. Now, that's nobody's fault. And I feel like it looks good, but it could be better. But the amount of time that it would take to do that, I just don't have at the moment. Which again, it's kind of like, well, I told you so, but it's too late for that. But I see that. And I don't think I had to learn that the hard way, because I knew Wix and I knew how to do it. And granted, the mechanics are easier. It has limited me in just my development. And I always think like, if I would be using WordPress right now, do you know how amazing this would look? But one day it will. Just not today.
Brianna, I feel the same way, because I started with Wix because I had done it before. I knew how it worked, and it was really easy to keep it like aesthetically the same, which was really important to me, that it matched, you know, what I wanted it to look like. And then switching over to WordPress, when Pedro talked me into it, took forever to figure it out, forever to move everything over. Like, it just took forever. And then it was hard because it didn't match what I had on Wix. Like, I couldn't do the same things. And so it was a struggle to kind of find the aesthetic that I wanted in this new format. But now I don't think I could ever go back to Wix, because WordPress, you have so much freedom with it, but it was rough. So I feel you. It was definitely, you had to learn that the hard way. I learned it the hard way. And I was like, man, I should have listened at the beginning, but oh well.
Yeah. I should have taken the time then, and it would have shown now, but I didn't, and it is what it is. But yeah, I realize that now.
And these experiences stays with us, and you know, they are going to be those comments or that experience you're going to share with people is going to start. So, you know, you still want to give them the option, but let them know, you know, this is what you could, you know, face if you go this route. And this is, at the end, it's still your option. You know, we don't know if somebody might be something that we didn't thought about is possible, but at least I think I didn't do none of what you guys did, but I already have your experience as it would be mine. So that is, you know, my takeaway.
Well, so, go ahead.
Well, this is interesting. And this is where our conversation comes into play. There are times I actually struggle, you know, when I hear this, maybe I should force people to use WordPress or force people to go in a certain direction or be encouraged more forcefully or more strongly encourage people to use something. But when I hear you say, well, you know, it is a lesson to learn, I'm going to take away from it. I've actually rebuilt my website multiple times. And every time I do it, I build it better and I learn from it. And sometimes you just have to learn it this way. And as my boys get older and as I work with more and more people and as somebody who mentors a lot of people, the more I think about how important it is for people to learn those life lessons, regardless of the discomfort, sometimes it just has to be that way. So, but listen, I still struggle. I do. I hate hearing, oh, I wish I would have. What do you think? Should I have?
Well, I think it was a lot of change because it was like, you're asking me that I'm now, you know, I actually have to learn. You're not, I mean, you're the guide. You're actually not the teacher, or you don't have the answers. You're asking me to do this platform that I've never done. And it's crazy hard. And you're asking me, like, in my head, it was so many changes that I needed to find something or a comfort. I knew Wix was like, that was something I knew. So it wasn't so much that I realized like I should have just done it then. And like I said, I feel like it would have been a million times better than what it is now.
But Brianna, the fact that you can see that and learn that about yourself is valuable. So it's kind of like the people that make those choices need to make those choices, and they have to go through that like chrysalis process.
Right.
And I wouldn't have if he had not enabled us or given us the option to go through that process. So yeah. Definitely.
I feel like that whole experience starting on Wix and then coming to the realization now that WordPress is just, and it was hard to learn, but it's an easier format now to update and use. I don't think I would have appreciated it as much or learned as much if it was just required to start on WordPress. Yeah. Like I have a better understanding and appreciation of what WordPress offers now compared to Wix.
Because you have the comparison.
Mm-hmm.
And again, to be fair, you did say, like,
you did tell us,
probably use this. It was me, or, you know, I think you pushed it enough. It was still my choice. I still was the one that said, I know what he said, but I know myself better. And so I don't think it was a you thing, or you pushing it on me wouldn't have made me realize that. Not at all.
I think
part of the learning process. Cool. Mm-hmm.
But to wrap up, my last question is there a minimum age you would recommend beginning an e-portfolio? And I think you know why I'm asking. I think we've had a little bit of this conversation with kindergartners.
Yeah, this is something that I have thought a fair amount about. My boys really didn't get going portfolios until probably, I guess grade 3-4-ish. So what would that age be? 7-8, something around that. Okay, so 7-8. So we're talking, yeah. So okay, 2-3. And also I'm going back. The technology wasn't as sophisticated as it is now. I would get them started as soon as possible. But the challenge you're going to face is that tools like Seesaw, and we have a lot of parents who still see that their kids have to build stuff to their standards. And when the kids are young, while you might let go as a teacher, the parents might not, and the kids still need supervision. So one of the challenges you're going to face, and I see it in myself, and I don't have direct experience with this age group. I actually do. I have worked with as a consultant in a couple areas. the parents become the issue. They want to control it. It becomes their e-portfolio. And the ownership, it's a, the ownership piece. So I would recommend kids getting going as soon as possible. Probably as soon as they're able to read and control their iPad or a computer. Really, I think reading is a factor, right? You have to be able to do that. So if you have any level of capacity to read and follow instructions and to write something, so we're talking probably, you know, depending on the kids, grades 1, 2, 3. I don't see a problem with that. Doing it earlier, it's going to be more of a, you know, parent project than it is a kid project. This is what I am tending to see. So if I were to do it again, I'd probably start right around where my boys were interested in making a record. So now here's something else too. They loved shooting videos. So the first thing they're shooting videos. So I got them a webcam or a camera that they put on the helmets when they were young. So they had to have a place to share it. So I was, I'm a shifty character, right? I can get people to do stuff by tricking them, doing something fun and enjoyable. Oh, then I think you should share that. And because we had traveled, we lived in different places. Well, you've got aunts and uncles who might want to see that. You should put it up on a website somewhere. Oh yeah, yeah. They want, you know, kids want to show. And now with things like TikTok and Instagram, it's really easy, right? So, but parents are a little bit concerned about doing stuff like that. So, you know, it's dependent upon the circumstances. And if you have the ability to work with children to help them do it, I would say as early as possible, within balance and reason. Managing screen time, I think, is an issue too. So now here's using screen time productively to create, I think, is important. And it might take away from just playing the games, which could be a good thing. So there's a lot of factors there. I know I'm not necessarily answering the question that well, but I would go as early as possible, depending on the parents. That's a variable.
That made me think of another question for you. Do you think that the e-portfolio in like kindergarten, first grade, second grade, because I've thought about this too, is like what age would it be useful for? But do you think for those lower ages that it could look differently? So maybe a student isn't able to read or write yet because they're in kindergarten, but they can definitely tell you a story. They can talk to you. You could record them talking to you about an experience or something, a project. And you as the teacher or the parent could document that onto like a Google Drive or a really simple version of what could eventually become an e-portfolio. So you still have the documentation of those authentic experiences, but it's not necessarily the student creating the e-portfolio part of it yet, like the website.
It's the artifacts.
Yeah.
And a lot of go ahead.
I was gonna say, I think collecting and organizing the artifacts is important. What I know from personal experience, unless you work with them right away, they get old quickly and they just end up becoming in the digital dustbin or the digital shelf. So one of the challenges you face is that because it's so easy to store digital stuff, I've got a drawer of hard drives worth of pictures and stuff that my boys did that they didn't do anything meaningful with it. So it's there, but boy, what a pain to go through and try to find stuff, you know, and then there'll be a conversation. Do you remember when we did this? Oh, how are we going to find that? Right. We're analog. Well, let's just go to the photo album. Flip, flip, flip. Right. You know, but with digital, there's so much. So one of the challenges that you face is that unless you work with the artifact, it can hit that sort of digital dustbin storage space that never gets viewed. So that's a challenge. That's a challenge. And I know that with, you know, think about your pictures you take on your camera, right? The thousands of pictures you haven't done anything with. Thousands. You know, I keep on switching back from Android to Apple, Android to Apple, Android to Apple. And I was looking at an old hard drive and I've got hard drives that say, you know, archive, right? I've got hard drives that are just pictures that I haven't organized yet. So that's a challenge you're going to face, right? It's so, yeah. just because we can. It's so easy to collect, but I think it's a curation part that's the important part. So sometimes less is more, you know, having that meaning behind it. Does that, and sorry, Colby, you were going to comment. I don't know if I started up before you were able to finish.
No, she said she was good.
Okay.
Well, Dr. H, we want to really thank you for being flexible, so supportive, and to, you know, take time of your, you know, from your family time to just spend it with us and just give us a better understanding of where we are, what can we do, and kind of just share your experience with us. We really appreciate it.
Yes, thank you.
Absolutely. We miss being in your class every week.
Well, I was really looking forward to this, and I'm excited to be able to help. And I'm thinking back, oh, I talked too much. I should ask some more questions because it's supposed to be interactive. But you asked such good questions, and so you know, I'm excited to share. I'm excited to see what you're going to do with this activity and what you're going to do when you move forward. This type of a dialogue, I think, is really, really important. And I'm excited. This is kind of what you do on a regular basis, isn't it? You get together, you talk, you hash out ideas. And yeah, this is so much fun.
Like for my students, like if I had them come up with questions and had them like a homework assignment, Zoom these three people, ask these questions, and then come back and let's reflect on your homework. So it's kind of a flipped idea, but I'm trusting them. Maybe I should be a part of it. Maybe I don't want them Zooming by themselves, but it's been a good time. I've learned a lot.
It makes me get there. What my students would choose to ask me. Like if I gave them that opportunity to come up with questions, like, I wonder what they would ask.
Something we need to think about.
Yeah.
But Dr. H, just to do a closure, we are going to split this in those three segments. So they're going to be three audios and we're going to put it in podcast. And I'm going to, with the help of our video producer, Brianna, we're going to edit the video on some of the parts and just kind of make a consistent video. So we're going to have also the option of the whole video or the three podcasts.
And I bet you they can send all of it to you so you can use
yes.
what you'd like.
Well, yeah, I suggest I would break it into three separate parts so that it isn't one. And that way there's different chunks and have different titles and stuff like that. So I wouldn't mind using some of it. And I'll get I have a learner's mindset discussion. This would fit into my format, and I wouldn't edit it at all. I'd use the three chunks, and I would say I got permission from you folks to include it, and I would offer it. So other than the breaks, I wouldn't edit stuff. This is real. Oh, yeah. This was live. This was good. This is fun. I'm excited for what you folks are doing. I really want to hear how you're going to do this in the classroom. That's a good idea. Now, what I've seen people do, I've encouraged people to do this, and I actually worked with some people in undergrads. I had a history professor. This is the first time I did it. It was back, I guess, in 2008, the first time I recommended it. He didn't want to really go online. He didn't see the benefit. He didn't see the benefit of digital stuff, and he was the traditional lecturer. But he had a complaint, and that was that he found that a lot of his students just didn't see the value of history, and he was a history professor, and there was so much history all around him, and history up and down the street. You have history in the old age home, and you know, how am I going to bring the old age home into my classroom? And I said, well, you know, why don't you get your students to build out a documentary on World War I or World War II or Korea? Because chances are you've got some veterans who are living in that old age home who experienced it, and they are history, right? And you know, in order for them to ask good questions, they'll have to do some research. And we went back and forth, and sure enough, he did that. And then this turned into a significant enough project where he did some work with the local museum. Some of the better projects that the students had done were showcased in the local museum. Like, they did a really great job. So they did a documentary. And their knowledge of World War II, and he had a group that did a Korea bit. was just amazing what they learned. He was shocked. He got them to read history and to research questions, because in order for these students to be able to ask questions that were intelligent, they had to know. So what you're talking about, these podcasting in your classroom, I think it'd be quite interesting. And it might be, you're asking me about the e-portfolio and why I'm doing the things that you're doing. So you could structure it in such a way where they ask you about the benefits of this and why did you ask us to do that? And, you know, it could be interesting to see what direction you can take them. And if you're working with middle school students, they're at that point where they can ask really, really good questions. So I think you should do that. That'd be a blast.
We just have to
let you know what? And actually, when you do this course, if you were to do that and then incorporate it, and then you do a podcast with them, they ask you like, oh man, that'd be so cool.
That gave us a great idea. Maybe I should have my students ask me questions and include that as like a follow-up podcast.
This is where we started. Yeah. This is where we're going.
Yes. Oh, okay. Cool. This is cool. Oh, yes. Wow. You guys are great ideas. So Brianna, where's the ADL going? Well, it depends on you folks. Think about that. That'd be so cool.
I can hardly wait to tell Brianna to have a kindergarten podcast.
Like mesh into basically what started the conversation of how would mom and dad feel about that? But in my head, I'm thinking of at least I can probably get 3 or 4 that would ask genuine questions that have meaning behind them. And
that's a model. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And maybe even get mom and dad involved in the Zoom version of this. Why not? Because the reality is mom and dad are involved. Mm-hmm. They are, right? So that'd be really cool. I think you could, with mom and dad or at least one of the parents involved, kids sitting on their lap or whatever, who, you know, if they're willing to show other kids that they sit on their parents' lap. I don't know how are younger kids today. You know, there's a point where they don't even walk beside you in the mall, right? That'd be cool too. Wow, good ideas.
Thank you so much.
Maybe you should ask your instructor if you can get extra credit for some of these ideas, you know. So
we should.
Good stuff.
Dart an email for us. Put in a good word.
Keep a recommendation for extra credit.
I will. It's cool. I can hardly wait to see what you do. This is gonna be so good. So good. Thank you so much. Thank you for asking me these questions and I think this was wonderful. Looking forward to see what you do with this and what we do next.
Thank you, Dr. H.
Thank you, Dr. H.
Thank you.
Everybody. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Bye.